This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Wayne Gretzky, not Aaron Judge. No. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome, the 99th installment. Can you believe it? 99 episodes. So cool. Thank you so much for joining me as I take you into conversations I have with other lead singers. And today, we have a great episode. I speak to Matt from Trivium. What a band. What a career. What a nerd. This guy's awesome. I had so much fun talking to him. And this episode goes very, very in-depth into, you know, a little bit more of the science behind, I think, singing and screaming and the regiment that Matt does to keep his voice in tip-top shape, keep his body in tip-top shape is really, really interesting. So stick around. Number 99 is coming up in just a minute. Oh man, the great one. That's what this episode is. This episode is the great one. Before we get into that, I want to thank all my sinners in the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club for being awesome. We got some new members from last week. Obviously, we had a great episode last week with Kellen Quinn of Sleeping with Sirens. If you missed that one, definitely go back. Of course, if you want to get in touch with me, it's super, super easy. LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. You can find us on social media. Just, I don't know, search it. It'll probably pop up. Please add us. If you like the show, write a review on iTunes. That's super sick. And if you like the show, please tell a friend. Tell your brother, tell your sister, tell your mom, tell your dad, tell your aunt, tell your uncle. Let's get more people listening to this show because next week, episode 100 with a very, very special guest. I won't spill the beans on it. I know some of you know. I don't care that some of you know. It's going to be a big surprise for a lot of people. I'm very, very excited. And episode 101, the Halloween episode, is also going to be super, super cool. So make sure you're subscribed. Hit that subscribe button right now. I do not want you missing these awesome upcoming episodes. In news with me, my band Silverstein, we just announced a big tour today. We're doing a co-headliner with another Lead Singer Syndrome alumni. That is Tonight Alive. Jenna and the boys are hitting the road with us throughout the whole U.S. It starts, I believe, January 19th. We're pretty much playing everywhere, so make sure you go get tickets. The tour is called the Get Free Tour, so that's where you go, thegetfreetour.com. We also have another great band called Broadside opening for us and another band who are super, super sick. You should definitely check them out. They're called Picturesque. So yeah, get your tickets now. We've got regular GA. We got the VIP packages, all that good stuff. So head over to thegetfreetour.com. And Silverstein, we have a brand new video for our song Lost Positives, filmed on location in Tokyo, Japan. Definitely worth a watch. So head over to the Rise Records YouTube channel. I think it's youtube.com/Rise Records, and you can check it out. Probably my favorite song on the new Silverstein record, Lost Positives. All right, enough about that. Enough about me. Let's get in to my conversation, a very interesting conversation, with Matt Hafey of Trivium.
Hello.
Hey, Matt. How's it going, man?
Hey, good. How are you, Shane?
Dude, I'm great, man. I'm in Germany actually right now, so
Oh, wow. So
we're dealing with like kind of a cool time difference.
Yeah, that's awesome. So it's 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 o'clock there?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
Nine o'clock. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's good.
You guys
good.
Over there? You guys over there doing shows?
Yeah, we're doing a tour. It's called For the Fans, and that involves us doing 14 dates just in Germany.
Wow.
Right? It's a lot.
Damn. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like it's kind of fun because it's like the kind of tour where you drive like you play a show and then you drive like 45 minutes and you play another show. You have a day off,
awesome.
And then you drive like an hour and you play another show. Yeah, it's like I saw our driver like absolutely hammered last night. And he's allowed
always,
to be.
Always comforting.
He's allowed to be. He only had to drive.
As long as he's not driving. Yeah,
exactly. But it's always a funny thing, you know. I guess you're just home in Florida, right?
Yeah, I'm in Orlando right now. And I was stoked to hear about this podcast. I've been a fan of your band for a long time, man. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, when you mentioned that to me, I was like, oh, that rules.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome, man. No, it's great to have you. And it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, our bands are roughly the same age. I know you guys started around, like, 99. We started in 2000. We're about the same age, too. And I don't think our paths have ever crossed. Like, I don't think we've done...
they haven't.
Definitely no tours, and I don't think any festivals or anything, which is, like, kind of crazy this many years later.
Yeah, that is crazy. It's very rare, very rare. But I'm sure it's bound to happen one of these days, right? Some festival somewhere.
Well, maybe we got to make it happen.
Let's do it.
But,
let's do it.
No, it's just wild, you know. And like you know, doing some research on your band, and I've always not only liked your band but respected you guys a lot.
Thanks, man.
For a few reasons, I'm sure I'll get into them over the next 45 minutes. But I'm always fascinated when I speak to people around my age that are Metallica fans, if it how much Metallica was a factor on them getting into playing music.
Absolutely, yeah, it's like massive.
For me, it's like number one. Like if it wasn't for Metallica, there literally wouldn't be. I would never have picked up a guitar. I wouldn't have cared.
Yeah,
that's how important the band was to me. And I know you're a huge Metallica fan, and we're around the same age, so. Is that the early life of Matt Hafey that, you know, was inspiring for you, like learning, growing up playing music, or was it a myriad of things?
My dad had always had guitars around. He never pushed guitar on me or anything, but I'd always see him pick up and play, like pick up a guitar. He never was in a band, but he played a lot as a kid. I picked up guitar around 11 years old, 11/12, because it was like the cool thing to do. I was like, oh, maybe people will notice me. The only style of music at the time I'd ever heard was stuff that's on the radio, and I was also starting to get into pop punk and ska. So pop punk and ska were like my first favorite genres of music. And I tried out for a pop punk band. I tried out for a pop punk band called Freshly Squeezed.
That is so Florida, by the way.
It is, absolutely. My tryout song was "Damn It" by Blink-182, and I thought I nailed it. I never got the call back, and I was like super bummed out. So at that point, I gave up on music. And then someone lent me this all-black album called Metallica's Metallica. And I listened to that for the first time. I'd never heard metal before. When I heard the music, I was like, I think this is the kind of music I'm meant to play in life. So I would put in as much time as I could until I was able to play that music. And then I ended up getting pretty decent at guitar, practicing all the time. I did my eighth grade I first did seventh grade talent show like right after the Freshly Squeezed thing or around the time of that.
Yeah.
I did Self-Esteem by The Offspring. It was just me and a drummer. And then in eighth grade, when I got kind of decent, I did No Leaf Clover by Metallica. It was just me and the drummer. And then the original singer of this high school band called Trivium asked me to try out for them. The tryout song was For Whom the Bell Tolls. I walked into this. I was in eighth grade, and everyone else were all like juniors and seniors in high school. And they were all kind of like laughing, like, what's this 12-year-old going to do? 12 or 13. And I came in, and I nailed the song. They brought me in as a lead guitar player. The original singer left after 2 months, and then I was promoted to singer, and the rest is history.
That's funny. It's cool too that like, you know, you never really had like any other bands. Like there was Freshly Squeezed, which you didn't get the gig. Who knows, maybe if you did get the gig with Freshly Squeezed, they'd still be together today. But Trivium is still together today with the same name, you know? I think you're just about to put out like your eighth album or something like that.
Yep.
Which is like completely, you know, it's crazy to think. You know, you didn't even have a name change. Obviously, some people have come and gone. But,
yeah, a lot of people.
But that's kind of a cool thing. Do you ever think about that, how unique that is?
Yeah, and the Freshly Squeezed guys are still going around, too. Like, they eventually became this band called Rory out of Central Florida.
Oh, I remember now, that band.
Yeah, and now they're called Teenagers.
Oh, yeah, so really?
Yeah, yeah. So Jordan Schroyer, who's, like, the main guy in Teenagers, he was the dude that was in Freshly Squeezed. It was him and a guy named Mark Ispass. I don't think Mark's in Teenagers, but Jordan is.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, those guys are still jamming and touring here and there. Which is cool.
What a small world, right? Like, I remember really, we played shows. Yeah. It's just so funny. Like, aren't there so many kids, like millions of kids all over America picking up guitars, starting bands? How do I know them all?
It's awesome, man. I love it. I love that. It's amazing.
That's crazy. No, and going back to Metallica, and people that listen to this podcast will know there is a little bit of an obsession with Metallica that I have. And the thing about it is, like, I'm the same as you, you know. I was 11 or 12 and I picked up a guitar and all I wanted to play was the Black Album. And some of those songs are pretty hard.
Yep.
For a kid of that age to just play, like, especially some of those solos, like, to play them note for note is not easy. Props to Kirk Hammett. You know, but I mean, I think that's a great place for a kid to start learning guitar. I think when people got a little bit older and they're playing, like, well, you're a little younger than me, I guess, but, like, with my age group, when like Nirvana and then like Green Day and the Offspring got popular, those songs were a lot easier to play, and I think, like, everything got a little more dumbed down musically, you know what I mean, with younger bands. But
new metal came around. Yeah,
you're right. And then but you kind of stuck the course and worked on your craft, and now you're, like, a very, very good guitar player.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's when I didn't make it into the pop punk band, and I was trying to figure out why, and then when I heard metal and said, basically, I was like, I want to duplicate these sounds, and the only way that I was able to is by default, by putting in the time, where I wasn't really aware of that. I wasn't really aware of the fact that I was practicing and rehearsing and treating this thing like a sport, and I really haven't had that click up until, you know, 4.5 years ago. I know that sounds really weird, because I've always played guitar in Trivium, and I've always sang and screamed in Trivium, and kind of just fiddled around and, like, just figured out how to be good at things, and not really realizing it was drilling, and not really realizing that was specific stuff I was, like, specific training that I was putting into it.
Right.
But about 4.5 years ago, I got into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and to have to learn something from the ground up for really what felt like the first time in my life, that's what showed me what true practice ethic is. And I started reapplying that to guitar and vocals again.
Wow.
So, well, yeah, when I got into jiu-jitsu, I started making my day, like, when I'm home Monday through Friday is like clockwork of a schedule. Like 9:30 is, there's like, it's a whole hour of my first vocal warm-ups from 9:30 to 10:30. And I do like 30 minutes of my vocal teacher's head voice exercises. That's Ron Anderson. While I'm playing guitar, while I'm doing these vocal warm-ups, I'm also doing guitar warm-ups from John Petrucci of Dream Theater's guitar warm-ups. And at the same time, I'm watching competition jiu-jitsu videos. So I'm doing these three things at the same time to kind of wake my body and mind up. The next 30 minutes is like 20 minutes of Trivium songs and head voice while I'm, like, foam rolling and stretching. And then the last 10 minutes is like full voice singing. So then my voice is basically warmed up for the next point of whenever I'm going to sing again. And then, like, whether that's, like, usually around 3 to 4 or 4 to 5, I'll do another hour and a half or an hour or so of full voice vocal singing and screaming, and then a cool down, and then that finally ends the vocal process of the day. But I started doing that after, like, I blew my voice out on our 6th record,
right,
on tour.
Yeah.
And I had to, like, relearn how to sing again, and I thought I'd never scream again, but thankfully I found, like, a safe way to start screaming again. So that's why I've applied all this stuff. But that crazy, weird schedule stuff was... Yeah, partially from my dad. My dad is a Marine, and my mom's Japanese. So it's like two very regimented, disciplined, intense cultures.
Definitely.
And then the jiu-jitsu thing. Yeah, so definitely. All that kind of spiraled into the days I live now.
Yeah, that's crazy. That is definitely, discipline is the word. That's like, dude, I could not be more opposite than you.
I wish I didn't have to do all that. And, like, it drives my wife crazy that I'm just freaking singing all day long. But I was like, this is what it takes for me to be decent. And
yeah.
Some guys don't have to. Like Bruce Dickinson, I heard, never took a vocal lesson in his life. He doesn't warm up for shows. Rob Halford, Ronnie James Dio never took formal training or warmed up. And those guys were incredible.
Yeah.
But if I go up unwarmed up, it doesn't work. So I just have to put this much time in. I figure if I can put in 2 to 4 hours a day every single day, then when I go on tour, 60 to 120 minutes is easy.
Sure. No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and like I walked into this tour and I had a bit of a cold. And, you know, we're headlining and we played, I don't know, 75, 80 minutes. And it was pretty tough, pretty tough. And the next day I was like hard. Could barely talk, not to mention the jet lag. I know you know how it is. But but so you say this is like, is this the way you've always treated your voice, or this is just kind of because you had this blowout back in like 2014?
This is because the blowout. Like before, I would rehearse a little bit. I kind of was trying, just like I did with guitar, kind of firing in the dark till I figured something out that worked.
Yeah.
Like I always used to be, still am, like confident in my rhythm guitar playing above everything else. And when I was pushed to become the singer of the band, because we couldn't find another singer.
Yeah.
Once our original singer left, we tried a couple people out, looked around, and it was Travis, who at the time he was like bigger than me and older than me, and I was intimidated by him. And then like a year later, I outgrew him in height, and I kind of went away. But I just listened to him. He's like, you know, you're going to become the singer. And I was terrible, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I was just mimicking sounds. And Trivium at first was like a three-piece, like traditional thrash band, sounding like Old Testament, old Metallica. And then I started getting into melodic death metal, bands like In Flames and At the Gates and Dark Tranquility.
Yeah.
And then into death metal and black metal. And I just kept trying to go more and more extreme with metal. And I started wanting to figure out what else I could do with my voice, because the singing wasn't really there. So I started screaming. And initially, the screaming kind of came up pretty quickly. It started developing and became really, I felt like it was already really strong.
Oh, good.
By our first or second record, Ember to Inferno or Ascendancy, I felt like the screaming was nailed.
Yeah.
But the singing was always something that I had a hard time developing to become strong. And it sort of got to where it was getting okay, but when I'd go on tour, the singing range would always dissipate. We'd have to start tuning our stuff lower, and we never really figured out why. Yeah. And then when I blew it out on Vengeance Falls and had to like cancel the rest of the tour and fly home and everything, the first guy that texted me was Matt from Avenged Sevenfold. He said, "Hey, I'm sorry to hear about your voice. How can I help you?" And he put me in touch with his singing teacher, Ron, and we figured out that I'd been screaming incorrectly for 15 years and singing mostly incorrectly. Sure. For like 15 years. So I decided at that point, I was like, I'm never going to scream again. And I started training my voice to relearn how to sing, got that. And then miraculously, this screaming training that Ron had been putting me through as well started kicking in. And then now I could do both things effortlessly. And as long as I keep the training up, I feel like I'll be all right.
That's a really cool story. So Matt is a great dude. And you talk about a singing guy, like, I really need to have him on the show, because, you know, he's like, if he can't hit his like top note, he's like canceling the show. You know what I mean? Like he is like really, really intense about that stuff. Tell me about this blowout a little bit. Like, was this something that just all of a sudden something didn't feel right in the middle of a show and you were done? Or was this like wear and tear over a tour that was like doing damage? Like, what was the story there? And I'm sorry to make you relive this, but I'm really interested.
It's all good. I think it's one of those things where I'd had minor issues in the past, and like even talking about it now, it's reminding me of other tours where I'd have like, it would be rough and I'd have to get like a cortisone shot, which is always like, it's not a cure, it's a mask. So I've done that a couple times. Or when we started having to tune everything down like half a step, and I started giving all the high notes to Paulo, our bass player, and me singing like lower thirds or lower fifths of the main parts, I started just thinking that was normal. And then on that tour, we were also supporting Volbeat and then doing festival dates as well. So on the Volbeat dates, I'd come up and they had this song called Evelyn, where originally the singer of Napalm Death did all the screaming vocals on it. So I was doing that song with them live. I was doing that and the Trivium set, and I was training a lot of jiu-jitsu and also doing a lot of like press and talking a lot. And I remember we did a show really late one night and then had a super early set. So it was really rough schedules where you never really had 24 hours in between. And it was Rock on the Range. So it was like the biggest festival to run. And that morning I woke up, I was like, all right, it's not feeling good. I'm not going to talk. I'm going to warm up really easily, go up and do the show. And I felt it from the first note. I was like, my voice, I only have this show. So I gave that one show everything I had. I told everyone, I'm like, it's done. It's done. It's not going to be cured. Because I'd gone to some vocal doctors throughout the tour. We're like, oh, maybe it's reflux. Maybe it's this. So I still keep this part up, which I think is good for singers. Like anytime I eat, I make sure I'm at least at a 45 degree angle or upright for 3 hours and never laying flat before that, just in case there is any acid. But once I saw my doctor and realized there was no severe, like it was borderline career ender, but I wasn't quite there.
Jesus.
And it took that kind of like investigative research to figure it out. And we're like, the screaming is wrong. Like the way my old screaming that's across all our records and actually do on our eighth record as well is so incorrect. And it's just me trying to, I mean, it's like me ripping my vocal cords apart, like screaming the loudest, weirdest sound that I can.
Right.
But the way that Ron has taught me, and I can finally describe it. I could never teach it to anybody, I don't think, but it rechambers that vibration of when your vocal cords are really loose, they make the screaming sound when they're like bashing together. But he's made it a way where that sound is actually happening in your nasal cavity. So there's no damage to your vocal cords. So it's then switched the distortion mechanism above into your nasal chamber. That's the way Matt does his screaming as well. And it took me like 2 or 3 years of training with Ron before it even started making a sound. And even the last tour, I didn't really get it great until like the last 2 weeks of the tour. And now I feel like I have it down.
Wow. Wow. This is also crazy. I definitely scream wrong. I definitely scream wrong.
Yeah, I mean, the wrong way sounds freaking awesome. But the difference is like when we do what you and I do, it's like we have to do that every night. Or we have to do that 3 to 5 shows in a row for an entire run. And that's what is difficult. But for the record, I'm all for giving it whatever it takes. And that's why when I said I would never do it again, and our producer was for record 8, Josh Wilbur, who produced our record, he's like, please. He's like, I've been a Trivium fan forever. I want to hear your old school scream because I love it.
Wow.
And once we finished all the clean singing, I was like, all right, I'll do it. I'll do it because it's what it takes. Because the safe screaming sounds good for live when it's like a loud-ass venue and it's a PA and there's effects and people are just getting into it. You can't tell the difference. But then when it's for the record, you can tell. And so for the record, we went full on the old school way. And amazingly, I think all the training I've been doing really made it where it didn't hurt. I mean, it was only like 2 days of recovery and I was back to being fine. But I could tell when I did that for the studio, that is not the way to do a live show. There's record screaming and singing, and then there's live singing and screaming.
I agree with you too, though. I totally agree with you. And I think that also, when you're like, when you talk about, okay, I got to scream this whole entire verse before I get a little of a break and I get to use the singing mechanism of my voice, right? Mm-hmm. When you do it in the studio, like, there's times when I don't even sing the whole verse. I'll just like scream the whole verse. I'll just scream like the line, mm-hmm. and then I'll punch in the next line. Do you know what I mean? And that way I can give all my breath and all my, you know, on one line. A lot of people don't like, a lot of kids and stuff don't realize that's how a lot of this stuff happens. That's the magic. Yep. You know, is doing it over and over again, line by line, and you know, I punch in words even when I'm screaming. So I think that helps with the vocal health.
Absolutely, and that's the way that it like has to be done on the record to make it sound great. But then when it comes down to live, it's like it's about sustainability. And if it's not something that you can do every single day, then it's not going to work. So that's what I was doing. I was basically doing studio performance live.
Yeah.
Every single day. And that's something I feel like most bands do by default anyway.
I think so.
And yeah, and some guys can survive off of that. Some can't. Some guys just naturally sing correctly. And for me, I'm not the kind of guy who sings correctly, obviously, because it didn't happen correctly for 15 or 16 years. And that's why I had to retrain myself. And that's why when I'm at home, it's such an intensive daily thing to just drill more of the good habit back in to get rid of 15 years of incorrect.
Right. But you know, like bands like us, you know, when we have, you know, we have two different types of things, right? We have singing and we have screaming.
Mm-hmm.
When we started, you know, you started in 99 and we started in 2000, there hadn't been a lot of bands that had done that over like a long career. Like that way. Sure, there's like someone like Slayer, you know, and there's been like some heavy bands that are just like yelling, and they've been yelling for a long time, and they're able to, you know, they haven't, their voice hasn't broken.
Yeah.
But I remember reading an interview with Chester from Linkin Park a long time ago, I think when they were on like their second album, and he's like, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to do this. Like, you know, maybe I just won't be able to do this one day. Cause like, you know, he's giving it all of his, you know, his voice. And I really think like when you, I'm sure when you started the band, you didn't know you'd be doing this in 2017. Right. You know, you never expect that to happen because there weren't like hardcore punk metal bands like doing this kind of sound that had been doing it that long.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's totally true. And that's why that's, you know, a lot of bands, they started doing it where they'd split it as well. Like where the
of course,
God, God It Just Screams, God It Just Sings. And I've come across a lot of other bands sort of in our genre and like kind of ride the line on the outside and in between of our genres and stuff. And these guys, like some of them just go album, you know, like I said, like album delivery every show. So maybe the first two or three shows of the run, they're on fire and then it just starts to deteriorate. And that's the hard part, like figuring out how to perform for live. Like that's something that I didn't know about up until three and a half, four years ago, before I started training with Ron. But every singing teacher isn't right for every singer. And that's the really difficult part because I'm a guy that really likes things to make sense and to have a formula and a schedule and a reason. And I've been doing, let me think, like the last big chunk of time I was home, I was experimenting with length of warm up versus the time in between to singing. Because a lot of people just warm up and go straight into a show, which is something that our bass player does. Our guitar player, Corey, he does backup screaming live. He doesn't warm up at all. Paulo's warm up is like 10 minutes and then he goes and does the show and he's ready. I was trying everything from like 5 to 60 minutes of warm up with anything from like no time in between to 1, 2, 3, 4, 8, 10 hours in between before I'd sing again.
Right.
It's just to see what works. And it seems like on tour, what Ron recommends, what also Miles from Alter Bridge and Matt Revenge do, they do their warm up 3 hours before show time. And then they kind of chill and they do another couple minutes before the show and then do the show. At home, I seem to be between like 5 and 8 hours in between and it seems to be as good as the 3. I know this sounds insane right now.
No, this is like really intense. But see, you know, this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast and like sometimes I do a whole episode, we don't even talk about singing. So, you know, so this stuff is like, this is fascinating. Like the, just the idea of this, I've never even considered the amount of time between when you warm up to when you actually perform. I've never considered this at all. So this is super unique.
That's awesome, man. Thank you. Yeah, it seemed insane. And like when people would ask me, because they, you know, sometimes people that don't know too much about music or heavy music, think you just go up there and yell and it just happens. And for some guys, it did. I remember hearing like Howard Jones didn't have to warm up much. And I think he's got one of the best scream sings that I've ever heard. I mean, like on End of Heartache. Sure. And I remember seeing him on that Ozfest where he would just crush it like that and not really have to put too much time into it. But I've tried that. And that was the majority of my career. And it just doesn't work that way for me. And it has to be this really regimented, intense, formulaic way of going into it. And then it works.
What happens if you have like an early festival slot? You know, like
you're up even earlier. Like if let's say, because we have had to do some of those Wimmer festivals where we're on at like 12:30.
Yeah.
So I'll make sure that I'm up 30 minutes before 9:30. So that way I can get up, eat, get a little bit ready and then do that 3 hour warm up for an hour and then scale the day that way.
Damn. You are an intense, intense man. And that's great for you. I mean, you had your wake up call, I guess, and you needed to do that. And here you are, like, you know, still doing it. And I know you got a big tour coming up as well. When you guys are doing, like, booking a headline tour like you have coming up in October, do you take a lot of days off? What do you like to do as a singer?
I mean, because we're still at the, you know, we're the size of band where we, you know, any days off is eating away at, like, finances. So,
of course.
I tell booking agents and managers, please, the maximum in a row nowadays I prefer is 5. I still don't like doing 5, but if I have to do 5, I'll do 5. So it's anywhere from 3 to 5 in a row, then a day off, 3 to 5 in a row, then a day off. Every once in a while, if it's insane booking, you're like, listen, Matt, are you cool with this 6 in a row? Are you cool with this 5 or these 2 5s in a row? And right. They'll always run it by me. And that's why I train so much off tour because again, I want to credit that to jiu-jitsu. Thanks to jiu-jitsu. Like the idea of that, because I never played sports as a kid. I did like karate as a really little kid, but to do something like jiu-jitsu, and I've competed and I've realized the competition is not for me with what I do career-wise, but I'm glad I did it. You do all this training 5 to 7 days a week, 1 to 2, 3 hours a day of all this stuff for this one sport, just for a 5-minute competition.
Right.
You know, 5-minute competition where the competition that I did, I got beat 12 points to nothing and I got rear naked choked out and my face was purple and I almost passed out in front of all my friends and everything. And all this training, all these years I put into it just was a defeat. But that's a good thing, is it shows you that that's what the training is for. And that's what a lot of musicians have kind of lost the plot on, is that we put all the practice and the time into our instruments and our vocals. So that way, when we go on tour, you don't have to think. And I remember I've had another singer tell me, when I told them the same thing I just told you about my regimen, my schedule, they're like, well, that's not really rock and roll. And I was like, well, actually, me, when I walk up on stage, I don't have to worry, am I going to hit this note? Am I going to last through this? Is this string part going to work? Do I know the words to this? I don't have to think about anything. It's just muscle memory at that point. And I feel like that's more rock and roll than going up there worrying, oh man, I got to hit this high note. I didn't hit this last week. Can I hit this tonight? And I don't have to worry about those things because I've drilled it so much that it becomes muscle memory.
Well, I think the rock and roll thing is that a lot of bands just don't care.
that's
the real story. They aren't even worried if they're going to hit the note. They're not going to hit the note, first of all. And then when they aren't going to hit the note, they aren't going to care. And they're going to be more worried about, like, if there's going to be any beers left in the dressing room when they get back there.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, when I was like 18, 19, we were kind of like a party band for like a year or two. And then as soon as we started playing bigger shows and we were reminded of the fact that we want to be, you know, a band that can make a dent on music, we're like, well, you can't live like that. You can't. It's not sustainable. I mean, maybe there's like an exception to the rule every once in a while, like the Rolling Stones. But I mean, that's the freaking Rolling Stones. They've written some of the greatest songs ever. So yeah, it's like, if you really want it, you have to put in the work for it. And that's something we know really well what it is to work. And like for the last record, and for every future record from here on out, because we did Silence and Vengeance slightly different. We went into it really open-minded with the great producers that we had for both those records. And we said, how do you want to do these records? And they wanted us to be flexible, not be too committed to the music, you know, have it like 60, 70% committed, you know, so that way it'd still be malleable when we're in the studio. But we realized that all of our favorite Trivium records have been done in a way that we go into it over-prepared. And that's what we did for The Sin and the Sentence. We were so prepared, it was ridiculous, to the point where we already had every vocal part memorized. Most guitar solos were written. The music was like 99 to maybe 100% there before even ever setting foot in the studio. And in that way, when we go to the studio, things can become even better from there. So we like to be – I'm thankful that all four of us in the band are addicted to practice and like sickly obsessed with – being overly prepared for everything we do, which is, that's just the way we have to do it to do well.
Props to you guys. Yeah. I was watching, I was watching your little kind of studio documentaries. I guess you're talking about the new record that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
The Sin and the Sentence, October 20th. There's a little plug.
Thank you very much.
And literally, I think it was Paulo was talking about, just your practice schedule and how, like, he's like, yeah, most bands just wouldn't even be fun. You know, but for you guys, it's like putting in this work is fun for you guys to practice so much.
It really is. I love it. I always want to be prepared and ready to go and for there to be no question whatsoever of what anything I'm going to do or say is. And I think that makes it better for the audience. And that way I don't have to be thinking about it. I don't have to think, oh man, do I remember this guitar part or what are the words that are coming up here? Or like I said, am I going to hit this note? It's just going to work. And I don't have to think about that. I can just enjoy the show.
Okay, so I got a real question for you. What do you do for fun?
Practice. no, for
fun. You are such a nerd.
Definitely Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is my other addiction in life. I'm so hooked to that. I've since weaned it down a little bit. I was doing like 6-7 days a week, but I figured for my body to be able to survive, it's 5 days a week. Usually like when I'm at home, Monday through Friday, 2 hours a day of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and then I'll also supplement like 3 days a week with kettlebell training for like 20 minutes as well. 2 days a week of Ashtanga yoga. There were like 7 years where I just did yoga. But since getting into jiu-jitsu, it's been all about jiu-jitsu. And I've recently, for anyone that's listening that is into jiu-jitsu, I've recently fell in love with like a lot of leg attacks, because like jiu-jitsu is joint locks and chokes. So all those things are at your fingertips, and there are all these different styles of jiu-jitsu practitioners, people that like certain submissions better, certain styles of guard better. And I've really fallen in love with like the leg attacks, especially these things called heel hooks, which are considered the most devastating of all the joint locks that exist. So I've really been getting into those a lot. So Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I love food. I love to eat. There was a while I was cooking a lot, and I had a food blog. I've since pulled that back a little bit. So not just eating. And then when I'm at home, it's always like my wife and I are cooking at home a lot, but it's always healthy. Because when I go on the road, I kind of eat whatever I want most of the time, but I keep the training up. And then gaming. I started Twitch streaming about 4 months ago. I've built up a pretty fun little following, and I've always loved video games. And I befriended some YouTubers and some Twitch streamers in the last couple tours, and they encouraged me to start that stuff myself. So I started a YouTube channel where I do like covers and some lifestyle stuff. And then my Twitch streaming is like me playing games on competitive gaming.
Wow.
And yeah, that. So super nerd
okay,
stuff.
Okay, so yeah, you got lots of stuff going on. That's crazy. One thing about your legacy is it's, you know, it's funny when you have so many records that you can talk about, like, oh, this, like our favorite Trivium records were these ones, you know what I mean? And I mean, you've done a lot of stuff, and I remember it was the record The Crusade came out, and everyone was like, whoa, like this record is different. He sounds different. Walk me through that time in your life and how it was to get that reaction that was so polarizing from your fans.
Well, we had just done Ascendancy, and the only country that, I mean, it did really well in America and exceptionally well in the UK. Like the UK, the record went gold, and one of the songs was played on BBC Radio 1. We started having a bunch of sold out tours over there, and things were going great, but I started looking around and started seeing that, I'm not saying that by any means whatsoever did we pioneer any kind of sound, but a lot of other bands had the same ingredients we had.
Yeah.
Guys were singing, screaming, breakdowns and solos, a mixture of metal and hardcore, and like other elements coming in here, melodic death metal and emo and all these things all into one band. And I said, well, we have this and other people have this as well. And Ascendancy's doing really well. And I'd see that other people still didn't like us. Like metal fans didn't like us. And I said to myself a couple of things, that I wanted to make a record to show what else our influences are, to show traditional metalheads and purists where else we come from. But I also wanted to make something that was the exact opposite of everything we've ever done and then what everyone else was doing. And I said, let's drop all the ingredients that everyone else is doing that we just did. So let's drop breakdowns. Let's drop screaming. Let's make this stuff sound more like the classic roots of where our music comes from. Get rid of everything from like a certain era on and go backwards. And that's what The Crusade was. It was us making a polar opposite reaction to everything we just did, which could have been suicide. But luckily it did piss off and scare a lot of fans of Ascendancy.
Yes.
But it also got us a whole new slew of fans we've never had before. I mean, Iron Maiden brought us out on the tour right after that record came out because they were into that record. And then other countries started getting into us. Because at that time, it was just the U.S. and the U.K. that liked our band. And then other European countries started following suit. And then we showed early on that we're the kind of band that at any time our record became very different. And so then next thing you know, before record 8, we have 7 records that are different from each other.
They are,
Yeah, which is a good thing. And I feel like Sin, we had to make something that made everything else make sense. So I feel like the Sin in the Sentence is like a mixture of record 1 through 8. And there's no other record that does that. Like, you can't say, like, record 4, which is kind of our most prog metal / death metal-y record, that doesn't encompass our entire career, but Sin does. So it's cool, and I like that we are that analytical. And, you know, when we were making the Sin of the Sentence, we said that this has to be the best record we've ever made, or there's no point in carrying on with this band. And like, we're to that level extremity with this, and we said, you know, if this isn't the best thing, what's the point for ourselves and our fans? And how much longer can we even survive if we make something different again? Thankfully, we made something good.
I totally believe all the stuff you're saying, and it makes so much sense. Do you go back and listen to your old records? Like when you're kind of saying, okay, I want this new record to be like just sort of a combination of our all-encompassing of our career. Did you have to go back and listen to records 1 through 7? Did you do it? Was it hard to listen to some of the stuff? Did it make you smile? Is there stuff that you really like that you did? Is there stuff you really don't like?
I mean, for when we were making Sin, no, we didn't look at it in a way of ever wanting to go back to anything. We just wanted to make everything tie together. So yes, we do like to listen to our stuff, and yes, we are really analytical of ourselves. Like, I feel like the Crusade, I love some of the songs on it. There are some of the songs where I feel like we definitely reached too far into seeing what else we could do as a band, and they didn't hit the mark. And there are a couple songs that are incomplete on that record. And I have, like, you know, when fans will ask me what my favorite records in order are, I'll always give them in my order. It's like Sin is first, and then In Waves, and then Ascendancy, then Shogun, then Ember, Silence, Vengeance, Crusade. And Vengeance and Crusade kind of flip-flop for the bottom. And
right.
The reasons why, I mean, we always have all these different reasons that we'll talk amongst ourselves or say to fans. And yeah, there are things that I look across that we could have done better, but I'll never go back and want to change them because they're finalized. And I think it's necessary to have all the goods and the bads, the successes and the failures to bring you to what you are today. And when we were making Sin, what our objective was when we were writing, we said, let's write the kind of music that we feel is missing, that we would like to hear as fans of metal and heavy music, and the kind of stuff that we want to hear if it was us outside of Trivium. So that's what the main, like, sonic goal first was. And then we said, we want this to make sense with everything else, and how will this make sense with everything else? And then it just, by default, ended up having the ingredients of 1-7.
Right. Why did you put Vengeance down so far? I mean, that's a newer record. You know, like, was that because of that record cycle taking your voice out? Did that contribute to it? Why you ranked that record so low?
It still is. I mean, it's, to put it in the correct terminology, it's still in my top favorite 8 of Trivium records that exist. but yeah, if I had to put it in favorites of, like, just without thinking too much about it, that's kind of the order I'd go. I do love the record. You know, Strife is one of the most important songs in our career because that's the song that finally opened the door up for U.S. radio for our band, which we've never had before that. Making the record was so fun with David from Disturbed. We learned a lot from him. I learned a lot about my voice. I mean, he did help me a lot for writing, helped us a lot with writing songs. I don't know. I guess just when I compare it to the other things we've done, it kind of naturally sifts a bit lower. And I still consider it a favorite. It's something I still am very proud of. I wouldn't change. We do still play stuff off all those records. But when it comes down to Silence, Vengeance, and Crusade, we went into those records with the thought of, let's find a subsection of our sound and concentrate on this, just one area of our sound, and let's not go beyond this. I know the Crusade, I said we reached, but we stayed in this one subsection of the classic influences of Trivium. Whereas with the rest, like, if I look at my favorites, like In Waves, Ascendancy, and Sin, those would be my three favorite. Those three, we didn't care how far out we went and how different anything was from each other. Like, In Waves will have something like a softer song, like Of All These Yesterdays, and then it'll have a song like Skyline Severance, which has no clean singing whatsoever, which is all screaming, or Chaos Reigns, which is like really weird time signatures. And I like that we can have everything, and I think that us in the band are happiest when we have that really broad scope and broad spectrum of sound within Trivium, and I think Trivium fans like that the best, when we have everything. And I think that kind of shows from our catalog. I mean, 1-7 is kind of everything, and then record 8 has all that stuff.
Cool.
And I think that's what it is. And with those three records that are kind of put towards the bottom, that's just one area of our sound.
Right.
And
it'll be very interesting to hear that record. I look forward to hearing it on October 20th, The Sin and The Sentence. I like that you're already using the short form of the record, and it's not even out yet.
Yeah. We've been planning it for so long. I mean, the song Wretchedness Inside is probably the oldest song on the record. And I originally ghost wrote it for a band. A modern band. I won't say what band, but a band approached me about writing a song for them. So I wrote this song called The Wretchedness Inside. I wrote lyrics, vocals. Actually, the original version I gave to them is on my old food blog, KeechyChaos.com. If you look up Wretchedness Inside, it's up there with the lyrics. And I wrote that for them, and they never used it. And I don't know why they didn't use it. Maybe they thought it sucked. So I said, all right, I'll release it for free and give it to everyone. So I released it for free, and we started writing record 8. Paulo said, hey, I think Wretchedness is a really good song. We should rework that. And we reworked it and made it into a Trivium song. So some of this stuff has been around for a while. And then he started writing some of his earliest riffs before Silence in the Snow even ever came out. And I think when he was describing why he did that, because we're doing an interview and they asked him when he said that, he said, because he feels like when we did Silence, we didn't let out that other part of our sound. It didn't have that extreme aggression. And whereas Silence in the Snow has some of the best melodic moments we've ever had and the most classic metal / classic rock moments we've ever had, it doesn't have that fast, aggressive, screamy, breakdown-y modern thing that I feel like Trivium needs in its sound as right. well. I feel like just as much as we need the classic elements, we need the modern elements, and that's what makes Trivium Trivium.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at the first four Metallica records, okay? You knew track four was going to be the slow jam. You know, you needed to have it. You needed to have some dynamics in a record. And that's just like anything, you know, that when you have some dynamics in your record, when you have a song that's a slow song, that's just going to make the heavier song heavier. It's going to make the faster song sound faster. And you need to have those dynamics, I think, within a record. Absolutely, you're going to need to have those elements, or like you're not telling a story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, Hurricane Irma, that was scary.
Yeah, that sucked. That sucked. We had just done the European, we did like a 4-week European tour of festivals and headlining shows. And then we had to go straight to a press tour, which press tours are no fun, but we're good at them. So we did that. And then we were watching the news on Harvey. It was Harvey, right? Yeah, the one going on in Houston, which was freaking terrible. And we started seeing that there was this big storm system brewing up by Florida. So I said to myself, my wife was on the press tour with us, and she did all our artwork for our newest record. Okay. And I was talking to Paulo as well, and I said, I want to prepare for this storm that's hitting Florida as if it's going to be as bad as what just happened in Houston. So we basically got home right after the press tour. Next day, went and started stocking up on food and water. And so luckily, a lot of my friends are like firefighters and first responders, so I have tons of first aid kits thanks to those guys. They always give me first aid kits before I go on tour. But then I wanted to get stuff like propane for the gas grill. I wanted to get a generator. And then the thing was declared as like a national emergency by Monday. And then I've never seen this before, but like gas stations being out of gas and fuel canisters being out and generators being sold out everywhere and just being general pandemonium for prep. So I had to like drive to a different city to find a generator after Lowe's.com like canceled our order without telling us on our generator. And it was this massive prep. But luckily, by the end of the prep, I think we could have survived for 2 weeks with no power. So I'm glad I could do that. I learned how to board my own windows up, which I've never done before. It was definitely the most adult I've ever felt before.
Yeah, totally. Well, you stayed through the whole thing. You didn't leave.
No, Orlando was not in an evacuation zone.
Okay.
Some people were like, hey, why didn't you evacuate? But for us, it was like, if we evacuate, we're taking away resources from a city that needed to evacuate. And so we didn't need to evacuate, thankfully, being pretty inland. And we just forwarded the house up and hoped for the best. And thankfully, there was no damage. We have a giant, like, multi-hundred-year-old oak tree in front of our house that just lost a lot of its limbs. But nothing broke anything. We lived off a generator for a little bit. And then we found out my wife's parents, they had power, so we went and stayed at their place. So we kind of sold out a little bit, but I was happy to know.
Oh, no, that's not selling it. Come on, it's survival.
Yeah, so I was happy to know that I prepared well, and it felt like could have lived through The Walking Dead.
Right. And now you got all these boards. Are you going to build a treehouse or something?
I'm keeping them in the garage for the next storm.
And you know it's coming, man. That's the horrific part. It's very sad.
Yeah, the earth is very angry at us, and it's letting us all know that.
But climate change is a myth. Right? That's what they're saying.
Obviously by our super hurricanes that keep coming up and hanging out in warm water next to Houston and just pummeling it for 5 days.
No, it can't be a coincidence.
Yeah, the earth is very fucking angry at us is what I just keep saying. Because we get what we put in. And I feel like we have not been treating the earth the way it deserves.
That's right. If only everybody had your regiments and your planning, man. Very, you're an impressive guy, Matt. Thanks for taking the time out of your very busy schedule.
No worries.
I'm trying to do the math right now. Okay, so it's 3 o'clock on a Tuesday. What do you, yep. Are you in the middle of a vocal warm up right now? Are you like watching the jiu-jitsu
videos?
The
warm up was done this morning, and I'll usually multitask too. Like I'm also doing physical therapy right now because jiu-jitsu, you'll have old injuries kind of flare up. So I'm rehabbing my back and my shoulder right now. So on the drive up and back, I did all my warm ups. Also went to cryotherapy and chiropractic while doing warm ups in between. So once we get off the phone, I'm going to do my second warm-up, do my true singing practice, cool down, and then start Twitch streaming.
Okay, cool. Well, that's awesome, man. So, well, before I let you go, and again, thanks for taking the time. Anything else you want to plug that you're doing? Let the people know. I mean, I know you got a tour coming up.
Yeah, for everyone that's interested in seeing us, we've got, I think, one of the coolest tour bills we've ever had, ever. It's Trivium and Arch Enemy co-headlining. We're also bringing out While She Sleeps, who I think is one of the best modern metal bands.
Awesome.
Fit for an Autopsy, who I listen to that band daily going to jiu-jitsu. It's some of the heaviest shit I've ever heard in my life. Anyone that likes video games, follow me on twitch.tv/KichiChaosReigns. That's K-I-I-C-H-I, Chaos Reigns. And my YouTube, Matthew Kichi Hafey, for covers. Like I did Damn It by Blink-182, except I did it in the vein of If In Flames in like the mid-90s would have wrote Damn It.
Oh my.
So that's the way I did that song. Yeah, with and if Johnny Cash sang it. So I did Damn It like that.
Damn, so you're just like, it's come full circle from Freshly Squeezed.
Absolutely, that was the plan.
Redemption.
That was the plan. Yes, it is. It is. But I'm just going to do a bunch of weird stuff. Like I've been doing like oldies like Roy Orbison and Elvis. Did Blink. I really want to do... I did Trivium. We did this like acoustic version of a My Chemical Romance song for their anniversary of Black Parade on Kerrang.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Kerrang never released our cover, so I should do that.
Yes, you should.
Stuff like that, you know, just things that I don't normally get to do for fun.
Well, I think it's great, man, and I think I think if my advice to you is you should do stuff like that and let loose once in a while.
Yeah, that is my worst thing is I never do let loose. I need to do more of it. Like I think too much. Obviously,
you do you, Matt, and all the best with the new record. I can't wait to check it out and have a great tour when you go and everything else, man. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks so much. Yeah, and stay in touch. Like just in general, like outside of congrats on the podcast. I can't wait to check it out. But like if you ever were in the same area or whatever, you just want to shoot the shit. Just
absolutely.
Send me a text
if you're ever up in Toronto. Let me know as well. And yeah, I got your number now. So
awesome.
Wait, is your number? Oh, I won't read it on the air. It's the one I have.
It has 921 in it, right?
I don't know, 407 maybe. I don't remember area code actually, but that would just be a guess. But
yes.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks again, and
yeah, thank you very much.
I'll see you around.
All right, man. Take care.
Yeah, cheers, bud.
Later.
So there it is with Matt. It just goes to show you that 99 episodes later, I can still learn things from another lead singer. And it's amazing. The warm-ups he does, all the stuff he does, the practice, the perfecting of the craft, you got to hand it to him. And I mean, that's got to be the reason that Trivium, here they are with their 8th album. They've had a great career and it's still going. It's still going strong. Before I play a new Trivium song, and believe me, it's a ripper, you're going to want to hear this. I want to remind you guys again, if you like the show, if you want more contact, more interaction with other fans of the show and myself, if you want Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise, the only way to get it is to join the All Access Club. I'm not going to harp on it too long today. All I want to say is check it out. The link, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. For as little as $6 a month, it gets you in, and we're having a blast on there, believe me. So check it out, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. So the new Trivium record, The Sin in the Sentence, is coming out in just a few days. I was going to play the title track, but then today, they launched a brand new track called Betrayer, and this thing is so sick. So I'm going to play the brand new Trivium song, which literally came out today. Here it is, Betrayer. On Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week for episode 100. Don't miss it. Subscribe. Subscribe now.
I see betrayer. loving you so much, naysayer. I watch as you just laughing up on will they. I'm addicted to be without dignity, a cheater. You thrive on luxury. I don't know what I expected. Was our time even real? Your callous heart never seemed affected. Does the liar even know how to feel? What do you want from life? Crush, champagne, and night. I'll never be a victim for you. I'll never be your fool. Calculated.